Mike Hutchinson was invited by the Bishop of Norwich, the Right Reverend Graham James, to talk to the listeners of Chatteround from his home in the grounds of Norwich Cathedral.
I'm privileged to be invited to talk on behalf of the listeners of Chatteround to the Right Reverend Graham James, the Bishop of Norwich. Now, you entered the priesthood in 1975.
Yes.
So that last year you reached your 40th anniversary. Did you ever think that you might end up as a bishop? Was it an ambition?
No, not at all. I mean, I began my ministry on a council estate in Peterborough, a place called Dogsthorpe, which is on the A40, well, just off the A47, yeah. As you go in from our direction to Peterborough. You know you've reached Dogsthorpe. It's where the big tip is, where all the rubbish is, and the brickworks and so on. The brickworks was there. And it was a wonderful parish in all sorts of ways, but it was a modern church on what was a modern council estate, and I went from there to an even newer and even more modern council estate in Welwyn Garden City. So it didn't sound like the sort of start that you would have if you were thinking of doing great things, but it couldn't have been a better ground.
We're fortunate in having a magnificent Anglican cathedral here in the city. It attracts people of all faiths and none. What importance would you place on these buildings in the 21st century? Do you think there's a risk of them just becoming tourist attractions, or do they still have a greater purpose?
Oh, no. I mean, the cathedral is probably as much used today as it ever has been in its 900 years of history. And, of course, it's a place of regular worship and prayer. I mean, here I am speaking to you around midday today, but I began the day at 7:30 in the cathedral with morning prayer. And there were about a dozen or more people there for that very early service. There are four services a day, of course, and the cathedral choir is probably the best it's been in my 18 years here in many ways. It's absolutely stunning. And there we are at choral evensong every afternoon. People can have, they can come to a free concert, you know.
And what time is that?
5:30 p.m.
5:30.
Come any day, apart from Saturdays when it's 3:30, but...
Right.
But 5:30 p.m. normally is choral evensong. Obviously, there's always days that aren't normal. The interesting thing, of course, is when the choir put on a concert and we charge £15 a head to come in, you probably get more than you do at choral evensong, which is free. But I think yes, worship and prayer's at the heart of it. Of course, there's a huge number of visitors. But when I look at what we've done here... we've extended the cathedral with the hostry and the refectory and a new choir school and so on through the great appeal that we had early in my time. And that's the largest extension to an English cathedral since the Reformation. And it's all for use. You know, I mean, there's an exhibition most of the time there. And I sponsor not just an art prize now, but a music prize as well, which is entered by the young people in the schools, secondary schools of the diocese. The winning piece usually is performed by the choir. So, you know, sometimes the art exhibitions, of course, aren't very useful for people with limited sight, but the music, of course, is one of the things I just notice sometimes, how many people who have very little vision are more likely to come to evensong than they are to some of the other more elaborate services in terms of ritual and so on, where you need to see what's going on. But of course, so much of cathedral worship is worship with the ears. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, went blind just before I was born as a result of untreated glaucoma. I mean, it could have been treated even then. And it was a terrible experience for her. And she ended up in a mental hospital for a time. It was very hard for her to come to terms with. But she then ended up becoming the most gracious and wonderful person, and I learned a lot from her. I often tell the story, indeed I told it on radio not all that long ago, how I remember when I was about 8 or 9 in Cornwall, we were out for a day, and she never got confident walking on her own because she was about 50 when she went blind, and so she never even had a white stick, actually. But I remember on a clifftop we'd had a picnic, and I was taking her for a walk, and she was catching on to my arm and relying on me, you know. And I don't know, I can still remember it happening, and I thought, she must love me a lot to, you know, to trust me. You know, you felt older. And actually the other thing that I remember was that she would want to touch me a lot. And actually, it never surprises me that in the Bible, Jesus is always touching blind people. You know, the means of communication is often to touch. And we've become a world that's frightened of touch for all sorts of reasons. And that can isolate blind and partially sighted people much more, you know, if they're not touched. Because that is such an intimate thing to do, isn't it?
Yes,
and also such a reassuring thing to do.
Do you, the working life of the church outside of the services, I know you sometimes have exhibits and things here, you know, but are you able to sort of explain to visitors actually what you're doing?
I hope so. Obviously, there are about 600 volunteers at the cathedral who help to man it and form part of the welcoming team. Everyone gets a leaflet when they come. As well as that, of course, there's a whole host of other things related to social concerns, to international links, the other day there was Pint of Science going on in the refectory, you know, the explanation of scientific problems over a drink. And, you know, each year now we've got a science festival. So we had a day last year at the end of a fortnight of science lectures and so on, trying to help people understand that science and religion go together. You know, science is to do with knowledge, the knowledge of the world. Religion's to do with the knowledge of God. And actually our scientific tradition comes out of us believing that we have a knowable universe, you know, that actually God's given us minds to understand the creation as it is. And it was extraordinary last year, I remember.
I remember you were persuaded to walk on custard.
I was walking on custard, yes, to prove that liquids and solids don't have such different... Yeah, absolutely. That created some attention and the television cameras, but there were 10,000 people in and around the cathedral that day, seeing all sorts of things, including, you know, there was a volcano that we had set up through some volcanologists. There were scientists explaining their work and also relating it to the faith, you know, to the Christian faith that many of them held, and how the two went together. So one of the great things about the cathedral is it will gather people. Anybody will come, and that's great. So we want to gather people for things that are both joyful, that will celebrate the Christian faith, that will also help people think about the world of which they're part, and also be lifted. You know, that's one of the great things that cathedrals do. They lift your spirits, really.
We're living in challenging times where conflicts between different faiths and extremism are making people feel very vulnerable. What can the church do to reassure people that there's a way forward and that support is there to help find solutions?
Well, of course, yes, it is true that I think sometimes We are conscious, aren't we, of the way in which we are a world in conflict, in tension, and sometimes at war. We're more conscious of that in our own time than our predecessors would have been, even in more warlike times. You know, there's never been a time where there's not been wars and rumours of wars, and Jesus talked about it and said, you know, I come to bring you peace, and we're still praying for that peaceful world. But what we've got, of course, is a sense that the wars are almost in our own homes, because we see them on the television, we see the conflicts immediately. We feel we're in a more dangerous world than I think the world is. When Parson Woodford at Weston Longville was writing his diaries, it was 7 weeks before he heard of the storming of the Bastille in Paris. Paris and Weston Longville are not that far apart. One of the interesting things I think about that is if you have heard of something extraordinary, a revolution, 7 weeks afterwards, you know that the world hasn't come to an end. Did you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, yes.
And the pace of our lives is such that we think, gosh, the world is falling apart. One of the things I feel that the church can do, or what the Christian faith proclaims, is a degree of patience. You know, that actually, that cathedral has been there over 900 years. The cathedral I worshipped in this morning my predecessor 900 years ago worshipped in. Do you know, it gives you a sense. And it's been through a civil war in this land, bishops being expelled from their palaces, you know, it's the king being the Reformation. And we will always have wars and conflicts before, you know, well, maybe the kingdom of God will come on earth as it is in heaven one day, and we pray that it will. But actually, our perspective always ought to be that there is more good in the world than there is evil, and I do believe that. There's more love in the world than there is hate. I see that in the families, I see that in all the people that I meet. And actually, that's the thing that I think the church has got to always remind people of, that that love will always conquer hatred, and that perfect love casts out fear. We saw it a bit, and we've had some awful tragedies. I look back to the Manchester one. If you think of the outpouring of love and community spirit that happened in Manchester, and you think of who was at the heart of it, speaking to the crowds on that first evening, it was the bishop, actually. And what happens when people are fearful? What happens when there's a tragedy? Where do they look even now in this secular country? The church is often the place that people go to pray, to remember, to somehow gain some hope. I think that's absolutely at the heart of what the church is there for, to give people hope in whatever their circumstances.
And we have a number of faiths here in Norwich.
Yep.
I assume you work with other denominations to try and establish links, which must help things, really.
Well, it's, I mean, clearly, compared with years ago, I mean, just recently I was at Walsingham with the Roman Catholic Bishop, the National Anglican Pilgrimage to the Shrine. We shared the leadership of it and walked together. That's now taken for granted. In a way, it wasn't when I was born. You know, there was suspicion. But things have changed enormously. Of course, we've got other challenges. There are some good relationships with the mosques in Norwich. And, of course, local Muslims are very fearful of the way in which they're treated because they're often labelled as terrorists. Mm. And one of the things, the only thing we can do is to make certain that we make friendships with them so that they themselves are not radicalised. And, of course, friendship undermines that sort of radicalisation. It's usually the people who cause the most damage are those who are the most isolated. And one of the things we've got to make certain we don't allow is groups to become isolated in our society unnecessarily. Well, that damages us in all sorts of ways.
You're a very busy man. You've got your duties towards the cathedral. You've got, is it 650 churches in the diocese?
Yes, there's 577 parishes, 642 churches, about 300 clergy, 110 schools. Yeah, there's quite a lot.
Right, and on top of that, you've got participation in the House of Lords.
Yes.
How do you find time to relax, and what do you do to unwind?
Well, I try and fit in things. I'm not very good on days off. We're reasonable on holidays, you know, although nowadays, of course, as a result of email, I take everything with me, you know, and you're in touch all the time. That's the trouble. I try and make certain that we spend time enjoying ourselves in the midst of a working day. So, for example, I can say tonight I've got a governing body of one of our academies. But I'm going to leave that immediately, and within about 20 minutes, I'm going to get a lift. So I'll be at the Theatre Royal in my seat. I shall be able to, and then have a drink afterwards. You know, and actually, one of the things you've got to do. I mean, I love amateur dramatics, and I love the theatre, and I love music, and I enjoy going to Carrow Road and so on. But you've got to try and fit it in to the rest of life. You know, I think sometimes you think, oh, I've got to have that day off. I'm not very good on that. But actually, I will try and fit in things I like within the course of a working day. And of course, sometimes in the House of Lords, yes, it's work as you're making speeches and attending committees and so on. But you have fascinating conversations as well. And so try and turn... I mean, I remember the Queen Mother was... they used to say of her, she turned every event into a party. and I think that's good. You know, try and turn your working life into one long party. Actually, if you bring enjoyment to it, I mean, I gain energy, I think, from people. and so much of life has good things about it. So,
well, thank you, Bishop Graham, for your very valuable time today, and I'm sure your words will be very much appreciated. Oh,
thank you. Well, I'm very glad to talk to all your listeners and wish them well.
Okay, thank you very much.
God bless.
Mike Hutchinson was speaking to the Reverend Graham James, Bishop of Norwich.